Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Chelsea Echo. Welcome to your preview for the first game of the season. Chelsea take it on Manchester City. And I don't know why I'm so excited. Actually, yes, I do. Because if you listened to the season preview, you'll have heard that there's a Pedro Neto-esque signing going on where there's rumours that the Chelsea Echo have been in the transfer market. So I just had a little look around the transfer market and thought, you know what, we need to sign somebody here to really bring together the unit, to make it more cohesive. So there's a couple of new signings to the podcast this season. And the first new signing I'd like to introduce, he's someone I trust very much. It's very much in the vein of, you know, Jose Mourinho signing Emmanuel Matic wherever he went, or, you know, Didier Drogba when he came to Chelsea, or, you know, just anybody he's had at seven of his clubs. And I thought, you know what? I need someone I know that can deliver. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome, brand new to the Chelsea Echo, it's Daniel Childs. Yay! Round of applause. Just us recording. Yay! I haven't got a shirt for you to hold up or anything.
I have got the best of Jackie to hold up right here. It's called the best thing for girls next to boys. So this is from the 1st of October 2005. I have no idea, but this is randomly on the phone.
Okay, just I want you to open it up and just random page. Let's just read what's in the best of Jackie.
Okay, right, it's very 60s vibe.
Oh, nice, big fan of that.
Okay, we've got a star dating chart right here. So this is like canon for the origin story of Tinder. This is where it came from. So it reads, here it is, a dating system that gives you an advance warning of what to expect. How's it work? Simple. Find out the boy's zodiac sign from those at the top of the page. Check yours from those at the side. Where the two cross, that's what dating him will mean for you.
We literally had in the pod last year, Jordan kept banging on about star signs, and it's literally been 2 minutes into the new season and I thought I'd got rid of it, but it's come straight back. I mean, I feel we got to go down this road now. We have to, right? So when's your birthday? When's my birthday? My birthday's 20th December. So I'm a Sagittarius.
Yeah, mine's the 1st of Jan. So I think we're both... Oh, no, we're not. Yeah, you're Sagittarius, just Sagittarius. I'm Capricorn. So on Capricorn, there's... two of a pair can be boring, deadly dull, when you share the Capricorn birth sign. And then Sagittarius, it just literally says in one box, happy-go-lucky dating. So there you go, Louis, that's yours. Happy-go-lucky dating.
That sounds about right.
I'm deadly dull. So that's the podcast from now on. Deadly dull and happy-go-lucky. I think that pretty much sums up both of our characters quite well.
Yeah, actually, that's kind of terrifying that it is. That is very, very much on the button. And I hate star signs. I think they're bloody pointless. But yeah, so there you go. Dan's going to be boring. That's his thing, apparently. And I'm going to be happy-go-lucky. But we're not here to talk about star signs. We're here to talk about Chelsea, what they're doing this season. Dan is going to be with me every single Friday now. We're going to be in your ear holes talking about Chelsea. And eventually, when I do move and I can get set up, because Dan's in the same situation, we will have it visually available to you. So you can look at us looking at you and talking, because that's a thing which everybody needs in their lives. But before we get into the game itself, Dan, we do need to have a quick discussion, as Tom and myself had one yesterday about all of the season and how we're feeling about it. And I don't know if you listened to it, but we were both very much in the mindset of this is going to be shit, but we just need to strap ourselves in for it. So give me your thoughts in 60 seconds on Chelsea's season ahead.
I think it's going to be probably a bit of a mess, and I do have deep fears about what could happen very quickly inside Stamford Bridge if things don't go well. It is bubbling underneath the surface in terms of that toxicity and kind of despair at the ownership and the direction of the club. But then objectively, Chelsea have some very good players, and there is a part of me that goes, it might be a bit of a mess, but surely the simple sort of economics and science of football is, if you put a lot of good footballers on the pitch, you probably will do okay. Doesn't mean you're going to do amazing, but you might do okay in the end. So that's my more hopeful response to that question.
Hopefully we do okay in the end. I have no hope whatsoever. It's not, we'd like sort of just in between the rise of the Empire and the New Hope. I'm in the mindset that Alderaan has just been blown up. That's where I'm at right now, if we're going to pop culture reference it. I've got no hope whatsoever.
It's Chelsea Echo nihilism. That's what it is. The Chelsea nihilism, not the Chelsea Echo.
No, exactly. Yeah. Maybe there'll be like some young blonde kid with floppy hair who can save Chelsea Football Club this season. Oh wait, there is, but we're selling into Atletico Madrid. Right, okay, yeah, so that's by the by. But anyway, we should just jump straight into your preview. We're going to have a little chat about Manchester City and all about how Chelsea will fare against them. But before we do get into our thoughts on it, it's very important that you get all the numbers and all the data that you need that me and Dan can't be asked to collect for you. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Tom Masters and it's Stat Shaggers.
The Chelsea Echo presents Stat Shaggers.
Yes, we are back for the first official Stat Shaggers of the season as Chelsea get their Premier League season underway with the toughest challenge of all, Manchester City. Four-time champions, Manchester City looking now for a record-extending fifth Premier League in a row. And it doesn't get much harder than that for Chelsea to start the season. Overall, they do still have a dominant record, slightly. Chelsea, that is, 71 wins from 178 games, 41 draws in there. And Manchester City themselves have won 66 clashes. So it's a pretty close now after City have had dominance in recent years. Since the famous Champions League win in May 2021, City have been totally dominant in this fixture, winning 7 of the 9 matches played. This does include defeat last time the two sides met in the FA Cup semi-finals in April 2024 at Wembley, when Bernardo Silva's late goal saw City pass Chelsea in a 1-0 win, which of course City into the final. They then went on to lose to Manchester United, which is why Chelsea are now competing in the Conference League and not the Europa League, having finished 6th. So overall, a frustrating FA Cup campaign there for Chelsea. In the league last year, though, Chelsea did cause City problems, a lot of problems, drawing 4-4 in one of the all-time great Premier League affairs at Stamford Bridge, before grinding out an impressive 1-1 draw at the Etihad, when Rodri once again scored a late deflected goal, as he just always seems to do against Chelsea. Onto the manager record, a short segment this week, as it probably will be for much of this season, to be honest, with Enzo Maresca stepping up into the big league for the first time. He has, of course, never played or managed against Manchester City, I should say. He will, of course, be going up against the great Pep Guardiola, who he did work under previously at Manchester City. Guardiola himself has only managed against Arsenal 30 times, more times than Chelsea's 28. And he does have a very respectable record against Chelsea, winning 15 of those 28 clashes, drawing 5 and only losing 8. This weekend, we'll certainly see a battle of the master versus the apprentice. Let's just hope Maresca can make his mark on the Premier League with a bang.
The Chelsea Echo presents Stat Shaggers.
Right, Dan, those are your numbers. Did you listen to any of that, or is that kind of, you just sort of zone out at that point?
There was a lot of numbers. Numbers were said, numbers were heard, numbers were expressed, and I feel at least 2.5% smarter after that.
So. Yeah, no, I'm sitting about maybe like 1.8 expected smartness. But that's after like 25 listens of expected smartness. So out of the, I don't, how do you even know how?
But we'll be down to 0 by the end of the pod.
Yeah, I mean, that is what I like about this podcast, is that we'll give you all the information, but we'll have fun with it, which means that you don't actually listen to it. You just laugh and go, ha, 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 we had a great time. We gave 5-star reviews. just checking for everyone. Please give 5-star reviews to the Chelsea Echo. But those are the numbers. That is the big things you need to know about that. And Tom undoubtedly has already started his spreadsheet for Chelsea this season. Honestly, that man loves spreading sheets. But let's get straight into it, mate. How are you feeling about playing Manchester City?
It's honestly very daunting. I think that naturally, I know I did listen to a bit of the previous pod, and I respect people who kind of look at preseason and go, does it really matter? And you can very much look at last preseason and go, Chelsea were very good in it. But then, of course, the first 10 games, I think we won one or two of them. So yeah, there is like there is variation, and just because you have an amazing preseason doesn't mean you've won anything. But I do think preseason matters in terms of performance. I think it matters in terms of, especially when you're bringing in a new head coach and you're also bringing in new players, it's important that they form chemistry and connections. I think the best preseason I've ever seen from Chelsea in my life was the summer of 2014. And it's not only because it's one of the best transfer windows we've ever seen, but the way Jose Mourinho integrated those new players, Fabregas, Costa in particular, and they started to forge a connection that we saw then build into the season, and Chelsea hit the ground running ferociously that year. The way Chelsea performed during pre-season, especially in that Man City game, tactically gives me a lot of concerns. The concern for me is when a team decides to press Maresca's Chelsea, how much they will be found out, how much they will concede possession in really bad areas. And I think really the big question maybe for you, Louis, is like, because I'm intrigued, is how long will that last? Like, how much patience will be given for that? Like, how much pain are people willing to put up with to deal with that style of football? Because I mean, my assessment, my anecdotal assessment is that there's not a lot. Like, there is not... He is not going to be given the same patience and leeway and kind of, you know, kindness and natural support that, say, Frank Lampard would be given in a similar situation naturally. And that's obvious, right? Because he doesn't have a prior connection to the club. But I am just very curious to see if like Robert Sanchez or Jorgensen are giving the ball away cheaply and we're conceding the ball to Erling Haaland inside our 6-yard box and he's scoring, how much that goes before people start thinking, well, this isn't really worth it. Because that happened a little bit under Sarri, but Sarri got aware of it in the first few weeks because we kept winning. So that problem didn't really rear its head till the end. And to be honest, Sarri's problem wasn't really to do with us stupidly giving the ball away inside our 6-yard box. It was to do with his lack of charisma. It was to do with his connection. It was to do with a style of football that kind of felt a little bit tedious. So yeah, I know that's a lot of rambling there, but there is deep concern for a first game of the season like this.
Yeah, I mean, look, rambling's what we do. I'll say that first off. You know, that's what we love doing here. But I think when you ask the question initially of how much patience will he be given, you've got the case study in Sarri, I feel. I feel Sarri only lasted as long as he did because Eden Hazard pretty much bailed him out on multiple occasions and thrived on that chaos. And I do see more Sarri in Enzo Maresca than I see Ancelotti, Ranieri or Conte. And the charisma and lack thereof it is something which has worried me. I do look at it, and when he started talking about Enzo and where he was playing him when he was further up the pitch, when he came on in pre-season, and then he started breaking it all down tactically and in such a nuanced way, I switched off. I went, okay, yeah, no, this is not what wins Chelsea fans over. Nor does saying trust the process right at the end of your very first interview at the club. Having said that, though, we are going to be stuck with him. I say stuck with him because I'm a pessimist by nature, and I want to see how he does. I have pretty much no emotional connection to the situation in comparison to maybe 2 years ago. I'm pretty numb to the lack of leadership that's been showcased at Chelsea over the past 2 years. So, look, I mean, I hope he delivers. I think the problem we've got is if the club wants to implement a style of football such as the one they're after in replicating Manchester City and Pep Guardiola, that's not going to happen in a year. That's going to be 18 months, 2 years. So we've got to sit there and go, okay, well, this is the situation and this is where we need to be and this is what we need to look at. People saying we automatically should get top four, we should, because of where we finished last year. There's definitely an argument for it. But whether or not it's delivered purely because of the amount of quality around us, I'm unsure of. And realistically, if they were saying at the end of the season, or people are calling for Enzo Maresca's head, which I hopefully will not be one of them, unless it really goes completely pear-shaped, it's 10 months ahead. I think my biggest question to any of those people would be, what is a realistic option if you're going to get rid of Enzo Maresca, who do you want? And then 99% of people are going to say Thomas Tuchel. That's not realistic. He's not coming back. And if you look at all the other options that were tabled during all of these, you know, managerial searches that Chelsea have done, an elite coach won't be coming to Chelsea. So I do feel that we've just got to let this run its course and just see how it develops.
So this is my hot take for the season. You say there's no one out there. My hot take for the season, and I'm prepared to put it on record right now on the podcast for the first time, because I've been talking about it all summer and I kind of think I deserve it, is a Cesc Fabregas interim after Christmas, before Christmas, and he takes us to the Conference League. And then he sacked about like 5 months later. But what a wonderful time watching Fabregas win us the Europa Conference League. That's my rogue shout. Because I think what will happen is the mood inside the bridge will be so toxic. This ownership, I think you should be listening to your fans, but I wonder if it makes me fearful, just based on some of my knowledge as well, that they maybe take a little bit too much interest in what, say, Twitter Chelsea thinks, when you shouldn't always, especially on social media, I think you should be more about, especially inside Stamford Bridge, that's, you know, as with any football club, that's the pulse, that's the mood of the fan base when they're inside the ground, and away fans as well. And I just wonder, they'd look at it and go, we need to get fans back on side, so it'd be a PR move. And a lot of people would naturally back Cesc Fabregas. I mean, you can't tell me Chelsea fans wouldn't want to see Fabregas in the dugout, right? And it'd be a Lampard, another situation where he probably arrives far too early and probably arrives in a situation where it's probably not suitable to him. But at the very least, it will inject something into kind of our pulses if it's gone really wrong for Maresca. I hope it isn't, because Chelsea will have to suffer a lot of pain before we even get to something like that. And I agree with you that there isn't a lot out there, especially if we're just being realistic about who would come in this current model of Chelsea Football Club and the kind of coach they want. It really does limit you, and it takes off the table a lot of coaches that instinctively Chelsea fans feel should be at the club, based on our history, recent history, that is.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that realistically, I mean, the only names that would really spring to mind straight off the bat, where it's a case of they're elite and they definitely fit everything, would be Ancelotti, but he's not leaving Real Madrid, or Tuchel, but I don't think they'd work with him. Your rogue shout of Cesc Fabregas is, it's not as rogue as you think, I will say that. I do feel that the way that he's positioned himself at Como is exciting. And I actually tried to get to the Modena versus Como game. That was on mine and my dad's list last year. We're like, right, we kind of want to see that. And what he's done with that side is extremely exciting. However, I don't think he'd come, because as much as he loves Chelsea, and he fits the style of football, so maybe that's what they're building up to, right? If you speak to anybody at Como and you speak to anyone who follows that team closely, Fabregas has his finger on the pulse with everything. He has control. And the reality of the current situation at Chelsea is that Win Stanley and Stewart are the ones that have control. So if your hot take is that Maresca's gone by Christmas, realistically, that should mean Win Stanley and Stewart follow, because they've had their four windows.
Yeah.
So if they've had their four windows and Fabregas comes in and they bring in one technical director, and my hot take for who they look at as technical director maybe isn't as hot. I can imagine they'd poach Doogie Friedman from Palace, or try to, and they bring in Cesc Fabregas, and that would be your model. And I would not be against that. I like Doogie Friedman. I like what he's done with Crystal Palace. I think Cesc is a great example of a coach. But again, I agree with you. I think it would be far too early. But the fact we're already talking about, despite the fact we've got to be patient, but he's going to be gone by Christmas. It's kind of sitting there suggesting that we're just giving up hope.
I mean, but this is the thing, though. It's like, how are we being unreasonable? There has been a lot of gaslighting about Chelsea fans' concerns. It's trying to dismiss them as being unreasonable and trying to simplify things. And I don't think Chelsea fans are being unreasonable. If you just lay out the facts, Since this ownership took over in 2022, they sacked Tuchel within weeks of the season starting. They appointed Graham Potter. He didn't even last the season. They had Frank Lampard as an interim. Then they bring in Mauricio Pochettino. He doesn't even get past the season. So the evidence, not only in recent Chelsea history of us not sticking with coaches that long, like that's embedded in kind of the club's history, even pre-Roman Abramovich. We're not a club that gives coaches and managers, as they were known before, lots of time. That's just kind of, it feels almost like instinctive in the DNA of Chelsea. So you add that on top of it, but then also the reality that Maresca has never coached in the Premier League before. And he's got a shit ton of players to deal with. I mean, people keep on saying, well, there ain't going to be 50 players at Cobham. And it's like, well, it's not just about what's there currently. It's also about the forward planning, the succession planning. Like, what about the players that Chelsea are bringing in next summer? How do they fit in when you've just bought Pedro Neto, who plays in a similar role to Estavio Willian or Kendry Pyers? What happens to those players? The whole mood and vibe around Chelsea is just chaotic. So how he deals with the pressure, like, it's easy when he was at Leicester because they were financially superior in the Championship and he could sit back, have a cappuccino at Seaview and instill his ideas over 6 weeks. Already he hasn't been able to do it at Chelsea because he had to go on a US tour where they were jumping from coast to coast, like that scene in Guardians 2 when they're just like flashing through all the jump points, right? Like that's what he's had to deal with. It's a whirlwind, and it's how Maresca as a character deals with that, along with how there is just a reality at these big clubs. How you deal with the media, how you interact with fans is a big part of it. And unfortunately, it's not that Maresca strikes me as a... Like, I listened to him and the annoying thing is, and it's just the nature of... I mean, we're getting really inside baseball in terms of like media stuff here, but having worked at Football London, and I'm sure with you, you've had access to this stuff as well, unfortunately, coaches are very reserved most of the time in front of camera. Mm-hmm. And most of their best quotes and best lines come when the cameras turn off and you get the embargoed quotes that come out usually like at 10 at night. And so a lot of people will not see that visually. They won't hear him say that. And they probably won't even pay attention to what he says. Maresca gave some really good quotes when he did a written interview, I think, with guys from The Athletic and some of the others. And it was the best interview he's done at Chelsea so far. He directly confronted the Diet Pep kind of accusations, and he directly confronted concerns about Cole Palmer. He directly confronted the idea that he's just a clone of Pep Guardiola, and I liked it, but I've not seen that in front of camera. And unfortunately, even if I'm someone and you're someone who really delves into this stuff and will read those long pieces and we'll hear everything because we're part of the media, we ingest and we digest those things on a regular basis, and I'll talk about it on my channel. Most people don't. So that stuff goes straight over the head. And whether you think that's fair or unfair, that's just the fucking reality of the situation. So him not being charismatic, him not having a Conte touchline demeanor, him not having a Thomas Tuchel way of speaking where you feel like you're being educated, there's a bit of humor, there's a bit of self-deprecation. He strikes me as a technocrat. He strikes me as someone that believes very much in his football and believes that his ideas come through the training ground. And I'm not saying that's stupid. It's just when that clashes with the reality of what Chelsea is, when that clashes with fans watching football going, I'm being told intellectually from people who aren't Chelsea fans, you know, people in the media telling me this is the style of football we needed to play. And it's supposed to be controlled and really intelligent. And I'm watching Robert Sanchez play as number one and he's costing us goals every week. I'm seeing... It looks like Cole Palmer's being stifled every week. The average Chelsea fan, and I fully back people's frustrations on this, will look at that and go, what's the point in all of this? And that's kind of my big concern, is that most of this move to a possession-based system is an intellectual exercise. Is it actually one that makes Chelsea a superior football side? Does it actually make us better and actually compete with Man City? I've got on another ramble. I apologize.
No, it's fine.
But this is what we're going to see this season, and this is why people feel like myself feel baffled. There are deeper things at Chelsea that we will probably discuss over the course of the season, right? Of why fans feel frustrated, but that a core idea is Maresca, right? And whether I don't think his character is going to win people over. His football has to win people over. It's that Chelsea have to be successful enough that it batters through the concerns and the lack of maybe enthusiasm that people have for him as an individual, and whether that can actually work. Objectively, Sarri had a very decent season in Chelsea recent history, like third Europa League. You know, it was a decent season, but people did. I know you could argue we're in a different ownership, different era at the time, and that was a long time ago now. But it is more than just winning. There has to be fans. We talk about winning a lot at Chelsea, but there is something behind it as well. Like culturally, our values as Chelsea fans, there's a certain type of coach that works at the club. And I don't think I'm being unfair by saying at the moment on Thursday, August 15th, when I say this, 2024, Maresca doesn't strike me as that character.
I agree. But we'll have to see. I'm very much completely emotionally withdrawn from this situation. I just want to see what happens and see how it develops. Because we are making the points, importantly, that there's a very specific style of coach culturally. And that's pre-Abramovich as well. It's like, you know, Ken Bates onwards, you could argue, you know, post Ian Porterfield. There was a very specific type of coach that worked. So, you know, if 30 years of history is not a good enough example for people to sort of open our eyes and look out, there lies the issue. Because my counterpoint to whenever anybody talks about, oh, we should play beautiful football like Manchester City, X, Y, and Z, I always argue, okay, well, I get that, but surely, you know, when Chelsea were at their best, Chelsea were the polar opposite. It was the age-old battle, I think, to simplify, of good versus evil. You know, the good, sexy, beautiful football of the, you know, Johan Cruyff education and all this sort of stuff, versus Mourinho, versus Conte, versus, you know, these managers who were just aggressive, powerful, really pushed the envelope, and were the polar opposites of every single bit of Barcelona education. So, you know, we just have to see what happens with it. But that's by the by. But we have gone on a massive tangent, on a ramble, talking about Enzo Maresca. We should dive quickly into the Manchester City game. But before we get into our thoughts ahead of the City game, let's speak to Stephen from Esteem Company, because I can't say a second name, mate. I'm really sorry. And hear what he has to say about Manchester City. Welcome to the Opposition Preview, the first one of the season. I'm joined by Stephen. Right, I'm not going to lie, Steve, I always get your surname wrong, and I don't want to get it wrong and butcher it like everyone butchers my name.
Give
as well.
It a go. So, how do you actually. See what happens?
Mick.
Yeah, you nailed it, mate. You nailed it.
Hang on. McInerney.
McInerney.
McInerney, there you go.
McInerney is the most common mispronunciation, so he's got that bit right.
Dave Smith, we're joined by. from Esteem Company, of course, obviously big City voice as well, and someone who knows the ins and outs of his football club better than any Chelsea fan can know the ins and outs of theirs. So we'll jump straight into it, mate. Let's talk about City. Obviously, you guys are favourites to win it again, and people will basically just say, why is this even happening? Because we all know what City are going to do. How have you found pre-season, and what's it like being a City fan at the moment and potentially on the way to another league title?
The problem with being the best team in the league, and I know the ridiculousness of that sentence as I say it, is that the only way you can look usually is down. So I think there's a tendency from City fans to be a little bit negative, because the perception is always, well, it has to end at some point. You can't win the league every single year. It happens in some places, but it's very unlikely in the Premier League for a million reasons. And the issue that we City fans have got is that there's a few things that we haven't addressed. For example, the Rodri backup, we've got a number six alternative. Alvarez has just moved on, so we haven't got a striker alternative currently. And Oscar Bob's just got a 4 to 5, well, hopefully no more than 4 months, but an injury, and he's been our best player and Community Shield man of the match. We've signed Savinho, the young winger from Girona, but that's been it, basically. So there's a feeling amongst City fans that while obviously the team is brilliant and we're favourites and all that kind of stuff, we might have just stood still, if not slightly regressed, because people are getting older. De Bruyne, Kyle Walker. We've lost a striker, a top quality striker as well in Alvarez. And of course, massive injury to one of the most exciting young prospects, and still no Rodri backup. So I know that sounds very negative, but it's very understandable in my opinion for why City fans will start to look at, can we maintain that level or are we going to drop? I'm reasonably confident, but I understand the concerns.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense because as soon as you lost Julian Alvarez, I think that's the best way to put it, to be honest, because obviously Pep Guardiola was very keen to keep hold of him.
Yeah.
It's a case of if you go out there and you try and find someone to replace Julian Alvarez, who could it even be? Because they know they're going to be playing second fiddle to Erling Haaland. Obviously, also, he was your most used player in terms of minutes last season as well. So just how much of a miss is he going to be? Because you're talking about regression. And I mean, you obviously said, like, you're always looking down, you want to push forward. Like, is there anyone out there you see that could replace him? And how important of an asset was he for Manchester City?
So Guardiola, weirdly, essentially put an ad out. He never does that. He said, look, we are looking for a potential second option there, and there must be someone who wants to come to City, and you know, essentially advertised for a striker, and apparently there's been lots of agents ringing Man City for that reason, and I think they're looking for the Chupa Moting type, you know, a guy who's going to come in a bit experienced, will come off the bench if Haaland's not available and score a few goals, which is a very un-Man City thing to do. We don't tend to do short-term solutions, but I think in this instance it's probably a good idea because we've got the young lad Claudio Echeverri coming in January, another Argentinian wonder kid. We're doing quite well with them at the moment. So I feel like City do need someone. The alternative is, you know, if it's not a senior guy, a more experienced guy, you try to sign, you know, a big name, but they'd have to be behind Haaland again, and we get the same issue that we've seen for years at City when you've got a world class striker. We saw Dzeko, Negredo, Balotelli, and now obviously, you know, Alvarez all move on because they're behind Aguero and Haaland. So I think the option of someone senior, more the end of the career, who fancies some trophies or whatever, and a good wage is a decent one. That aside, Guardiola is not obviously scared of playing false nine. We did it for a couple of years, quite famously, with Foden playing there a little bit, and we saw like Mahrez and Bernardo and De Bruyne all take turns. So I think he would try it again. I think Oscar Bob was probably a decent shout for that, but obviously he's injured, unfortunately, which sort of mixes things up a little bit. Bernardo Silva could give it a chance. It could be that Phil Foden rolls it back and does it again. That'd be a shame from my perspective because Phil had a breakout season as a midfielder last year, and I think that'd be such a shame to sort of change his game again. There are options, but it does feel they're not ideal. I'm sure Pep would make it work because it's Pep, you know, he always does. But I do think the urge for a striker is quite strong for Pep because I think he's aware that squad can thin very quickly and those midfielders are going to be needed.
The fact that you've basically just sat there and gone, maybe we could put Bernardo Silva in or maybe Phil Foden, I don't know if it works. It's a little bit of a tough one, you know. I'm literally listening to that going, oh my God, I just wish we had the same problem.
I mean, to be fair, they're not strikers. So it's like, it's one of those things, they're great names, but they're not strikers. So. And you're right, I'm not going to claim poverty, but they're not Erling Haaland or Julian Alvarez as a striker, though. So it would be a dip by City standards, arguably.
If we're talking about dips, right, at the beginning of the season, people usually say, oh, City maybe aren't at their best. And I think that's what a lot of Chelsea fans are clinging on to with that first fixture. And obviously, we played you in pre-season and that was a waste of time. So I just stuck on the bear instead. Is there anything that you could take from that game in pre-season, how you guys progressed and maybe even looking at us, and is there anything that Chelsea could target to maybe try and get a result here? Because last year, obviously Pochettino seemed to have Pep's number in some way, shape or form.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we'll have the same success this year. So is there any way you think Chelsea could target some weaknesses in this Man City team?
Yeah, the weakness is entirely down to a lack of match practice and fitness. So many of our players have just got back. Rodri came back on Wednesday and the England lads came back on Monday as well. I doubt they'll be involved because they'll be on the bench, but they probably won't start because if they were going to start, you would have presumed the same for the returning like Dutch, Portuguese, Belgian players for the Community Shield, and Pep had them all on the bench. You know, he didn't start Bernardo Silva or he started Ruben Dias, to be fair, but he didn't start De Bruyne either, so he's not afraid to play some of the young lads. And against United, I was genuinely surprised how much he committed to what he did in pre-season, like James McAtee, Nico O'Reilly, probably names that a lot of people aren't familiar with, especially in a Man City sense, started alongside Kovacic in midfield, and there's no way that's even close to our first choice midfield. Obviously no Rodri there, no Foden, no De Bruyne. To me, it's hard to call how much he's going to lean in on the returning players. As part of me says, you've got to have to play him at some point. You know, you can't bring him all off the bench for minutes, and it's the Premier League, so you can't just persevere with Nico Ryan and James McAtee. But it's Pep. He could do it, and that might be the weakness for City. Oscar Bob has been phenomenal, genuinely phenomenal. I was more excited about him, his development this season, than the entire campaign. Like, honestly, I was considering putting a bet on him being the young player of the year in the Premier League. I rate him that highly. But he's out now, and then the team I look at, it's going to be good, but I don't know how many changes he's going to make. If it's Community Shield level team, I think there's a hope there for Chelsea, because as good as they were, some of these young lads, it was still inexperienced. And Chelsea, look, you know, it's been a crazy couple of years for you, but you're still Chelsea and you still have that inherent quality, and you definitely, you'll be up for it first game of the season. So I would say basically Chelsea, your best bet is trying to win it in that first half, because our bench will be strong.
I have no hope. I'm a natural pessimist. I'll be brutally honest with you, mate. I'm just kind of sitting there going, is it going to be 5 or 6-0 by the end of the game? So you've mentioned those youngsters. And just before we wrap up, I mean, there's a few names I'm very interested in. Obviously, McAtee and Cole Palmer were sort of considered similar in terms of their qualities when they both come through the City Academy. I remember you chatting with Dan last year about it. Yeah. And obviously, one of them went to Chelsea and obviously exploded. And McAtee obviously had a move to Sheffield United, which maybe didn't suit him as much. What do you think about McAtee's growth this season? Are we going to see a player which maybe might have a similar campaign to Cole Palmer, or are there other young players which you think, well, these are lads which are going to break through and really show what they're made of this season?
I think Oscar Bob is the one most comparable to Cole Palmer, because I really do believe he's going to start on the right a lot. We would have if he wasn't for injury. But for James McAtee, you're right. He was held up as one of the shining lights, and he played in the same team as Cole Palmer. For its worth, I've always rated Cole. I thought he was brilliant. I was genuinely devastated when he went, because I knew this would happen. Not to the same extent, obviously. I don't think anyone predicted that many goals.
No.
But I knew he'd be brilliant. I just knew he would, and I've got the receipts to back it up. But I also remember when McAtee and Palmer were in the same team, and McAtee a lot more subtle to his game, but just as good. Like a genuine genius at youth level for City and for England. And he's shown glimpses at senior football in his two loans at Sheffield United, won the Championship, won the Premier League, of that quality. The only thing is, of course, he's coming into Manchester City, which is the highest level for number eights. You know, City's history over the past 10 years, you could probably pick all-time Premier League 11s, and if you wanted to put City's midfield in there, it'd still be of a high quality. I'm talking Yaya, David Silva, Gundogan, Fernandinho, Kevin De Bruyne, you know, Bernardo Silva. It's a phenomenal collection of midfielders. So that's the level for McAtee to aim for. Will he get there this season? No, he just won't. He won't play anywhere near enough. But I think Pep knows that players of his quality and sort of understanding of football don't come around that often. He's such a technical player, such an intelligent footballer. And if he finds the confidence, because he looks a little bit subservient to the team at the moment, then there could be something special there. So I think that's why he's hanging around, because it's worth finding out. Pep was very vocal about being impressed by what he's learned from his time and learned at Sheffield United, because he really values a relegation battle. It makes a man out of a kid, essentially. So he has that quality. He's learned how to play men's football, as everyone says these days. And he's got that City heritage in terms of he understands how they play. He's been there since he was a kid. So I do wonder if you give him a little bit of time, eventually we'll start to see what we saw at academy the other way. He'd glide past two people and put it in the top corner from 20 yards, or play a delightful reverse pass that no one else saw, and he can control the game. I think there's potential for him to start doing that for Man City's first team. It's just going to take time and patience, because so much of his game, as of a lot of young players, will be about confidence and adapting to the surroundings as opposed to latent ability.
Well, I'm very excited to see him, because I've only heard good things about him. Yeah. Obviously, he was a player who I quite like the look of whenever I watched him play youth football.
Yeah.
I always thought it was really interesting to watch. And like you said, the technical ability and the subtleness to his game, that those are my favourite sort of things. I like those intangibles, or those things that other people don't notice.
Yeah.
So I'd be excited to see what he does this year. But having said all of that, obviously the game's happening on Sunday. I'm not going to ask for a score prediction, because that's a waste of everyone's time. Let's talk about this season. Manchester City, like you're saying, it's looking down. That's kind of where Man City are right now in terms of English football. Is it going to be a closer battle with Arsenal this year, do you feel? Or do you feel that maybe Manchester City will just get the job done again like they do and turn it on after January?
No, I think it's going to be closer. I don't know until the end of the window, because I know everyone says that, but it's sort of true. Like, City are allegedly in the market for a couple of players, and you don't know if it could be just a sort of backup, or we just... Like, a couple of years ago, we signed a Kanji on the last day of the deadline, and everyone was like, oh, okay, he's all right. And he's turned out to be a world-class centre-back and been phenomenal. So if he can pull out a signing or two like that again, the whole, you know, complexion of the squad changes, and it feels more balanced, and all of a sudden the confidence goes back through the roof. Right now, the momentum's with Arsenal, I would argue. And only because just logic dictates that you can't keep doing it and doing it and doing it. And the hunger for Arsenal must be just insane, because we've made that life a misery. I've enjoyed it, don't get me wrong. But eventually, you know, the teams bite back a little bit. So that's my fear. It's going to be really, really close. I've got to back my side. I can't help it. And it feels like it's the right default state to do. But if Arsenal won the league this year, I would really not be surprised. But we'll see. We'll see by the end of the window where City are.
Well, I hope you're not right, and I hope City do win it, because the fact if Arsenal win the Premier League, it is going to be more unbearable than when Liverpool did it. So we'll have to see what happens with that, but hopefully you guys get the job done, because it's not going to be us this year. But mate, thank you very much for coming on the pod. We really appreciate your time, and we're going to hand over back to the guys. See you guys in a bit. All right, quick thoughts. Man City, how are you feeling?
To be more optimistic, I think that there is always a feeling with Man City at this time of the season that you can maybe catch them on a bit of an off day. They usually have within them a few off days before Christmas time. And for whatever reason, maybe it's Pep working on some new things. Maybe they have a few injuries. I mean, you've got to factor in that Rodri just returned, I think, to training. And he's obviously a huge player for them. Will they regret selling Alvarez? I mean, at the current time, I think most people would say no. But over the course of the season, you're not sure, right? Chelsea as well, because there is just natural talent in the squad, and we saw this in the second half against Inter Milan, a mostly dull game. But once Palmer was on, once Nkunku was on, even Sterling, I know people really don't like Sterling, but there are flashes with Sterling is a very hot and cold player. And actually last season, he looked pretty good against Man City. He seemed to turn it on against his former club. So Chelsea naturally have talent there. I think the big concern for me for Chelsea is just, again, as we were just discussing, is their own mistakes, their own errors, because that's what's really cost them in pre-season. It's giving the ball away cheaply. It's also, I think, our high line is a massive concern for me. We're playing this real high line, and the defence for me just doesn't look coordinated. I can't really tell you with much certainty the back four I would play, because that centre-back pairing has been very loose over pre-season. I mean, all of them have had shaky moments. So there's just a massive unknown around this game. I think in attack, Chelsea still look like a productive team, or they look like a team that can create opportunities, and that gives me hope. And when you can't be up against City, the theory is that you're going to have more space in behind to attack. So that hopefully will help us. Nkunku, I think maybe played a little bit against City in the reverse fixture. I don't think played either of the other games. So it's exciting to see him and Palmer on the same pitch. Absolutely. Neto, I think, off the bench potentially is an exciting player to have. So maybe just, I could see a score draw here. Absolutely. And maybe, just maybe, if things go Chelsea's way, it could be a little bit better than that. But or a lot better than that. But of course, they are Man City. They are inevitable in a lot of ways. They are the automatons. They are the and they're also led by a coach who will know the frailties and the flaws of the system Maresca plays. And I think he very much jumped on that in pre-season.
Yeah. And that's my big concern, is the fact that he is, I'm not sure, is going to learn from the mistakes that are made in that game during pre-season, because that was a pretty much full strength, you could argue, Chelsea team, aside from the obvious. So Kukurean, Cole Palmer, who would be walking straight into the team, were not playing in that fixture. So we're just going to have to see what happens. I think up until the end of October, that is probably going to have to be the mentality, because we are still not 100% certain what we're going to be seeing. And I reckon by the end of that period, now by Halloween, hopefully it won't be too much of a horror show. But hopefully we'll be seeing a side which has a rough understanding, and we are finally ticking the ball about. And it obviously all hinges on a couple of other bits, such as the signings of Victor Osimhen potentially. But that's another conversation for another day, because that is going to be another ramble for 25 minutes, no doubt, if me and Dan start talking about Victor Osimhen. But before we give you our thoughts on the potential 11, it's very important that we get involved with what's going on down at Cobham. As you are listening to this on a Friday, and you'll notice that we are releasing this at a later time. That's because with the brand new season of the Chelsea Echo, we've decided that we're going to add another segment, and that is us heading down to the training ground and hearing from Enzo Maresca.
We are doing well since day one. We are improving things. We started just 1 month ago, so it's too early to see the team in the way I would like to see. But in the same moment, I'm quite happy because in terms of process, I think the team is ahead where I expected. For me, a good season means that I can see game after game, month after month, team that is improving. And for sure, with timing, we are going to close a little bit the gap between us and the teams that they are ahead of us in this moment. I said many times, after 8-9 years together, you can do so many different things. So Pep is not a manager that is always doing the same. He's always changing, and with us will be exactly the same. So will be a tough game, but as you said, exciting. Start the Premier, start against the champion, and we see.
You just mentioned time. Pep Guardiola was speaking this morning, and he said, if they give you time, this is going to work. Is that what you're asking for from this club?
Yes, sometimes sounds like excuse because every manager is talking about timing. I know that timing in football it's difficult, but at the end I think in our case, because of the process, because of the idea, I'm 100% sure that this team is getting better game after game, and with timing we're going to close the gap with in this moment City, Arsenal, these kind of clubs that they are dominating in English football.
John?
Hi, John from BBC. How you talk about time and you talk about your team improving as they go along. So do you think you're going to have to ask the fans to be, you know, maybe a little bit patient as to start with in this process?
Yeah, for sure we need their support in any case, because when you are inside the pitch and you can hear your fans that they are behind the team, it's always a big support. It's like we said many times, it's like 12 players, you know. So for sure if they support us and they be patient, we're going to pay back with the performance and with the results. One of the reasons why I accept Chelsea for sure is because it's one of the biggest club in the world, but also because for me the squad is very good. I had the opportunity to analyze the squad when we faced them in FA Cup, and I had the opportunity to analyze deeply the squad when I had the first contact with the club. So the squad for me is full of talent. It's a very good squad, and they are perfect in the way I like to play. So this is also one of the reasons why I'm here, is because I'm convinced that the players we have, they are already good. They can be even better improving, and I'm quite confident on that.
Back here at Chelsea Echo HQ, which is Google Meets currently, we need to go through our predicted 11, Daniel. So, Mr. Childs, let's go through that. How we did it last year was we kind of just agreed on a combined 11 rather than tabling our two. So we'll just kind of go through the team and we'll pick it as we go. So I think in goal, as much as we want it to not be Robert Sanchez, it's going to be him in goal, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the fact that he played all of the Inter game, I think, was quite telling to me, at least.
Yeah, I was very unimpressed with his technical prowess. But hey, here's what it is. Left back, we're probably going to be seeing Sparky, aren't we? He'll be Sparky Paella man.
Yeah, I think has he? I couldn't really tell. I wasn't paying that much attention, even though I was at the game.
I was the same.
Is his hair still red? Is it gone full red, or has he dyed it back again? Because I really hope he ain't going to be red for most of the season.
It's not really red, is it? It's more like an auburn. You know what I mean? It's like a as the licensed barber amongst the Chelsea Echo. It's not quite red, but when everyone's going, it's red. It's not. It's like a tint. So that it didn't look like it had completely gone, but that'll be gone in the next few weeks, because it's just, they just don't stick around that long when it's just a tint. So you're probably gonna be seeing him that. But I mean, I wasn't sure about the cornrows he had either. That was extremely questionable. He looked like a, you know, 10-year-old girl on holiday to Disneyland. I wasn't particularly sure about that. But that's just me. But yeah, we'll have him at left back.
So our new signing this year was cultural appropriation.
That's the Brazilian wonder kid signed from Fluminense for £27 million. But we'll move on from that because that's going to be a touchy subject and we need to avoid that because there are too many dark jokes. That means we won't get sponsored. So the two centre-halves, I think, from what I've been reading today, Wesley Fofana is going to be the partner to Levi Colwill first choice this season until he undoubtedly has another ACL. So, I mean, I'm guessing that's going to be our pairing for the Man City game, right?
I feel like those two are the ones that I predict will be the strongest partnership over the course of the season. Not based on, like, the evidence of what I saw last Sunday, absolutely. But then you could argue, I mean, Tosin, especially against Man City, had a really bad day. Badia Shill has not recovered the form he had when he started at Chelsea. Yeah, I think Levi and Wesley, for me, are the two best centre-backs we currently have. I mean, we've decided we want to sell our best centre-back. So, I mean, that's what it is. So, you know, this will be the two. And I think, hopefully, they quickly find form. Because I do think, technically, I like Wesley. I think he's a really good defender if he stays fit. And Levi, too, had some really strong performances, one of them against Man City away from home last year. I think just needs to, for me, he does have lapses in judgment. And I think he does have moments in games where he just makes quite baffling decisions. And I do wonder if it's a lack of experience next to him, which you could argue is not going to be provided by Wesley Fofana. I mean, might not even be provided by Tosin Adarabioh. So that in itself, of course, is a concern in defence.
Yeah, that's, I think, the biggest issue Chelsea have now, despite being our strongest position for a number of years, is the centre-back department. The £50 million that we'd be looking to spend on João Felix, I'd argue, could be better spent on a centre-back. And I believe the person who could provide that experience, not only as a player on the pitch, but off the pitch culturally as well, is currently playing for Crystal Palace and has been linked with a move to Newcastle. So I think I'd be spending that money on Mark Gahey personally. Conversation for another day. So yeah, I think Wesley Fofana and Levi Colwill is going to be the pairing at centre half. Right back is Mal Augusto because Reece James is suspended and wouldn't be playing anyway if he wasn't suspended because he's injured again.
Yep.
Midfield three. This is going to be where it gets extremely interesting. I have no idea. I mean, Caicedo's definitely the name in there, but then the question remains, who are going to be the other two alongside
him? Well, this is the problem I've had, right, is that I want to have both Nkunku and Palmer starting. But the issue you've got is that unless you are playing effectively a 4-2-3-1, which Maresca, he kind of has been playing, but hasn't really. He, you know, the last time against Man City, he didn't even play a left winger. Like, he decided to play Kieran Drewsbury-Hall, Romeo Lavia, Moises Caicedo and Enzo Fernandez. He decided to play all four, which means we had a real problem down a left wing because Gusto had to basically play as a left winger and a left back at the same time. And it just was terrible. So my issue is, in my team, I think I would play only what would be deemed two central midfielders. But I do think you have a massive problem in terms of who you're leaving out and then potentially the balance of the team being hurt, because if it's lopsided and Chelsea are being done on transition, I think my two names are Romeo Lavia and Moises Caicedo, purely based on preseason performance, purely based on, I think, their ability off the ball. But there's no way Enzo Fernandez is not playing this game, and he's probably going to start as captain. So yeah, I think it's a real balancing act from Maresca. So I could see a scenario where you have Lavia, Caicedo and Enzo all starting in midfield. But then you have a big question to ask of, well, then who are you dropping out the front kind of bunch of forwards, basically. And I think it's very likely that Madueke probably doesn't start. Or Mudryk or Madueke, I think, are massively at risk of not starting this game.
No, I agree. I mean, for me, I wouldn't play Enzo, personally. I don't see where he currently fits in this team. Which is harrowing, I guess, from a political standpoint if you're at Chelsea.
Breaking news, Sasha Tavolieri, I've probably pronounced that Sasha, his name is, he's done the time, the sand timer emoji, quote tweeting a Osimhen tweet from January 27th. So
that
do you know what that means? That means that Chelsea are signing João Felix.
Yeah, I think the team is going to be what you've said in terms of three. You're going to see Fernandez, Lavia and Caicedo. I think then you're probably going to be taking, I mean, I'd be taking both Mudryk and Madueke out. And my front three would be Nkunku down the middle, Jackson on the left, Palmer on the right. But he's not going to do that because he likes natural wingers. So now it's going to be very much a case of we've just got to see what happens.
So that's my worry, right? Because naturally, I agree with you. And the way Pochettino played Nkunku as a left-sided player at the very end of last season worked because he had license to roam centrally, sort of be off Jackson and make those kind of darting runs into the centre. My big concern with Maresca's system is because of this whole inverted stuff, what you mentioned, and I watched it, I could see it against Inter. We looked weirdly lopsided, especially in the first half. It changed when Palmer and Nkunku came on and Gusto started playing as a wing back. But the problem you had was, it was weird. Chelsea would try and build up and there'd be a load of Chelsea players on one side of the pitch. And then Chelsea, to try and get round Inter's block, would move the ball to the left or the right. And then what would happen is the ball would reach Mudryk or Madueke or whoever was on that side. And then suddenly it would just be them with the ball. And there wouldn't be someone running in behind, like an overlap from the fullback. There wouldn't be an eight making a run into the 6-yard box. It would kind of just be weirdly like, well, what happens now? And then what would happen is then Chelsea would think, well, we just got to recycle possession again. So that's my concern, is that there's just the lack of balance. So what I don't want, my big fear is that, say, what you suggested, right? Jackson is probably a better winger than Nkunku. So I actually don't mind seeing Jackson as a wide left. I think he probably can do that role quite well. But my concern is, say, Nkunku starts there, Jackson plays as centre forward in Palmer. And what you have is Nkunku and Palmer both naturally like to move towards the box, right? They're kind of inside players rather than natural touchline hugging wingers. So then what you have is, if Cucurella and Gusto were inverting, or one of them is, suddenly either the left-sided player gets isolated or suddenly you have a real lack of width on one side of the pitch. That's my huge concern, is that really. I'm not saying that Nkunku can't start wide left. It's just, it gets again, like, logically what we were talking about earlier. Are you actually getting the best out of that player then, or are you kind of limiting them because your system kind of requires them to do this? And it's like, well, I feel like you should be adapting to the players you have. That doesn't mean you eliminate or sacrifice all your principles. It's just, can't you adapt your style around and actually elevate what you do based on the players you now have at your disposal? You have a higher level of player to work with. You're not working with Championship players now. You're working with, in some cases, in the case of Palmer and Nkunku, I think generally elite players. And it's your responsibility to kind of elevate those players rather than, well, we're going to shift them out wide. Because what happened as well on the other side of Palmer, I don't know if you noticed in the second half, he started wide right to begin. And then very quickly, I think Palmer realised, and I saw him having conversations with Enzo, is that it was like, he ain't receiving the ball in dangerous areas. He ain't receiving it and kind of moving in centrally to kind of connect with players where he's most dangerous. And what happened was he moved more inside right, and then Gusto kind of moved as a wing back. So at the very least, I'll give Enzo credit in that sense, that we did see some adaptability, in a sense that in a game, maybe the fullbacks won't always invert. One of them will potentially move into a wing back role. So at least there's, from what I saw last week, there is some flexibility there.
Yeah. I hope so, is all I'm going to say to that. Because speaking to Leicester fans, they've said, yeah, he's got no plan B. I was like, okay, right, this is going to be fun. So we'll just have to see what happens. I mean, I've kind of already written the game off, so we'll take the rough with the smooth. But you can hear my and Dan's thoughts post-game in the voice note reviews, which will be making a return, of course, straight after Chelsea versus Manchester City. But that has been your preview of Chelsea versus Manchester City. It's good to be back with the Chelsea guy for another season. Post-game, you're going to have final score with the score. Of course, he's hosting that from the States now. He's moved over there and he's having a great time. Best thing he said to me, Dan, it was really funny the other day, he went, thank God the US know what air conditioning is. So that'll be really fun for him. But he's obviously going to be doing that show for you. But this has been the Chelsea Echo. Make sure you follow Dan on his socials. Dan, where can people find you?
Son of Chelsea, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, Radar Dish, MySpace.
Radar Dish, Napster, SoundCloud.
Napster, Bebo, Vimeo.
But he's given up on Twitter.
yeah, given up on Twitter. Yeah, that is official. I need to take it out of my description. I've still in my description on my YouTube. Because I still kind of keep it open for like DMs and stuff. If I have to interact with people that way, I'm not on the timeline anymore.
Nah, that'll be me just winding people up with satirical responses this season. So you guys can look forward to that. So make sure you find me at @Louis_Beneventi on Twitter and @LouisBeneventi on all other socials. But if you are new around here and you have come from Dan retweeting the Chelsea Echo, make sure you stick around for this season. Give us a cheeky 5-star review, tell more people about it. And on the final score of the score show, listen and get involved. But guys, this has been the Chelsea Echo, and we will see you guys later. Ta-da.